Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, proudly presented by Butler Snow, where we cover topics of interest to lawyers handling appellate matters in Texas courts and beyond. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
You're listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Todd Smith.
And I'm Jody Sanders.
We have with us today Jacqueline Schaefer from Seattle, Washington. And you go by Jackie, is that right?
Yes, Jackie. On pleadings, I put, you know, Jacqueline to sound extremely fancy and official, but yeah, you can call me Jackie.
Well, of course, it's a beautiful name, but Jackie, it does seem a little less formal. So that's what we'll do. And I see that's kind of how you are, at least on Twitter. So I feel comfortable at least asking you that question.
I'm a very new Twitterer, by the way. So yeah, I appreciate, you know, learning from the other legal tech Twitterers out there. And it's been a great place to kind of network. And I think that's actually maybe how we connected.
That's right. That's right. I saw you on Twitter and you had a product offering that I thought was quite interesting that we're going to get into here a little bit later. But before we do that, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, and maybe your early law practice experience?
Absolutely. So I am an attorney and I've been practicing for about 13 years. I'm originally from the East Coast and I started out as a litigator at Paul Weiss. Great place to learn an incredible attention to detail that has stuck with me for my entire career. Then actually I moved to Alaska. My husband's from Alaska and it's such a, you know, exciting place to continue my legal career. And I spent most of my career in public service as an assistant attorney general. So in Alaska, I was in the appellate section and had the chance to, you know, regularly brief and argue appeals before the Alaska Supreme Court, write attorney general opinions, and worked on, you know, some really interesting issues around the state's relationship with tribes and child welfare cases. And then I joined the Washington Attorney General's office, where I was still doing, you know, appellate work, but I was advising the headquarters of the Child Welfare Agency, which is a massive, you know, statewide agency. And so that really kind of sparked my interest in, as the appellate lawyer, you're getting the facts and you're getting the cases kind of in a neat little package. And you don't sort of see the messy stuff that's happening earlier on in the case and, you know, really experiencing in real time, you know, what's happening on the ground. So that was really fascinating. And it was really interesting to do that while also handling appeals, because I could sort of, it really helped me actually in my appellate practice and gave me, you know, a newfound appreciation for the trial courts and doing complex litigation. Then I got more interested in sort of the systems aspect of why is there such a massive child welfare caseload? And so I joined a national nonprofit headquartered here in Seattle called Casey Family Programs. And Casey, the goal is to try to transform the child welfare system. And it was kind of in that role. I was in-house counsel, but I was working with a group called the Judicial Engagement Team across the country that was trying to help judges understand sort of the outcomes of the child welfare system. So to help influence, you know, how they thought about their rulings and their cases. And as part of that, I was really learning about court technology, data. I got super into data actually and started writing this law review article. It was kind of like a beautiful mind, you know, moment where I'd be taking notes and like, yes, I want to share my thoughts on how I think data science and technology could really improve our child welfare across the country. And so I was just, you know, working on this and nights and weekends and just kind of getting out my creative energies. And finally, you know, published a law review article this past December in the University of Illinois Journal of Law, Tech, and Policy. It was called Harnessing AI for Struggling Families. And that, you know, in writing about the data science, I learned all about the underlying technology. And that's ultimately what led me to found ClearBrief. I sort of, you know, was taking that scientific knowledge and combining it with my real world experiences. You know, I've talked before about there was one particular pro bono case that I worked on where I was representing a woman and her young son from Honduras. And there, you know, it was just this very powerful moment at the final hearing where, you know, if we lost, they would be sent back to Honduras and probably murdered. And I could tell going in that the judge was not super inclined to agree with my legal theory on the case and grant asylum. But there was that moment that I'd experienced so many times, actually, as an appellate litigator, where I showed I pointed the judge to a sentence, you know, in the brief, to a piece of the brief where I was talking about the evidence in the case. And the judge was looking at, you know, it was like the therapist report. And I saw the judge change his mind, really, because he saw that evidence in the context of our legal arguments, and we won, and he granted asylum. And it was such a powerful moment. And so it was kind of all of those experiences sort of swirling around where, you know, I was thinking there has to be a better way to use the power of tech and data science to surface those important pieces of evidence and show it in context. And that's really what being an appellate litigator taught me so much of. It's all about, you have to weave your legal argument, but you have to show the source. You have to show the case or the factual document.
Spend less time analyzing data and more time digging into the facts with litigation analytics on Westlaw Edge. Powered by the largest collection of federal and state dockets, litigation analytics instantly aggregates data points to produce information such as likely timeline, outcomes, representation, and damages from which you can base your case strategy and assess potential litigation costs and resources and position yourself for success. Gain a strategic edge using data-driven insights with litigation analytics on Westlaw Edge.
Do you have any background in AI? Or I know your article mentions natural language. I mean, did you have a tech background before you started digging into this?
I didn't. I've always just been that person, though, at the office who thought it was actually fun whenever we were introduced to, you know, the new product. I don't know if you had this experience, but there's always a lot of groaning, I think, with lawyers when, oh, we have a new timekeeping tool or a new, you know, practice management tool. And I was always like, this is awesome. I love it. I can't wait to, you know, this needs to be more efficient. I've always been, yeah, just kind of a tech enthusiast, but I didn't really consider it part of my identity. You know, it's always something as lawyers where we have such a strong identity in being a lawyer, I think, for so many of us. And being technical can seem at odds with that. So I don't know. I didn't really embrace it, I think, until I started writing that law review article. And it reminded me a lot, actually, of when I got a new case or some, because, you know, I worked on all different types of appeals and cases, and I had to learn the subject matter every time, like we all do, right? And so it was just that, having that curiosity. I really encourage lawyers to sort of embrace that curiosity and sort of learn about tech, even though it can seem so off-putting and like it's a world that's at odds with what we do day in and day out. It turned out to be such a, you know, rewarding part of studying. And I really got into it actually by just ordering some books on Amazon. I think that was the quickest way. I was like, okay, I want to learn about blockchain. I'll just order some books and just read it and slowly absorb it.
I have to ask you, what was your undergrad major?
So I was an English and French major.
Okay. So there you go. All you moms and dads out there who worry about their kids with arts and sciences majors, Jackie, you know, not only did what we might expect, which is go to law school, but now she has turned it into a genuine interest and now has become an authority writing a law review article about AI and how you can use technology to drill down and get at what the record, you know, really says and make writing more credible. So
before we jump in, just for people like me, Jackie, can you kind of give just a high level explanation when you're talking about AI in the legal space? Like, what exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, great question. I was just thinking about that because the fact that I was an English and French major, I feel like I've found my people when I talk to natural language processing experts, because they are all about language. It's a kind of a subset of AI. that is so relevant to so much of legal tech, which is really analyzing the patterns in language, that some of the patterns that we don't even realize that are not something we consciously think about as writers, but more like statistical relationships between words. And it's really, really cool. I love the folks on my team. Actually, Christy Hollingshead, she's NLP PhD on our team. And we just like to, you know, nerd out over, you know, language. And so, yeah, I feel like that's sort of a great subset of AI that if you're interested in it, start learning about that, because there's so many different aspects of AI. And, you know, another really relevant area has to do with, you know, image recognition. And I think we've seen a lot of the products that have come out of that. That's more kind of what we see as consumers, you know, like Google image tools. I don't know if you've ever been on a walk and you can take a picture now of a flower, and Google can tell you what kind of flower it is. And it's using AI to kind of match those images. So there's all different subsets of AI, but the one that we're focused on at ClearBrief is called natural language processing.
No, I'm glad, Jody, that you asked that question, because it is helpful to me to understand, I mean, what we're really talking about in terms of what is AI. I mean, we hear the word artificial intelligence used, and of course, the naysayers are saying that AI is going to take over the practice of law and we're not going to actually need lawyers anymore. In our line of work in appellate practice, I think there's really not as much rumbling about that, because, you know, there is an art, it's not just data that you're moving around on a page.
Absolutely. No, it's absurd, honestly. I think that fear has been so overblown. That's just simply not where we are with the science that we can replace human understanding, especially with writing and the kind of complex writing that we see in briefs and motions. And the human brain is so amazing. It's hard to replicate how all of the subtle inferences we're making about the implications of specific words. Technology is not going to replace that anytime soon. And to be honest, okay, this was something I was thinking about this morning that I wanted to talk about, which is what I am really interested in, and actually what my LaRavi article is about, is the boring stuff. I am like really interested in the boring, unsexy aspects of AI, which is AI to lift the administrative burden that takes away from our creativity. And that's actually what I argue in my LaRavi article as well, is talking about the highest and best use of AI is not to try to determine who's going to commit child abuse. Like, I don't think that's where we're at with the science. What we should be doing is try to reduce the repetitive, stressful tasks that take up social workers' time, that take up attorneys' time and courts' time, so that they can actually focus on the people and the families that they're trying to serve. And that gets less attention because it's less, I guess, interesting sounding, but I think it's interesting.
This makes me think of, let's see, Inception is one. And then let's go way back, Minority Report.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think about too, Minority Report.
I think it's comforting to hear that someone like you who has taken a really, really deep dive into this, dare say has developed an expertise in this, does not fear that lawyers, especially appellate lawyers, are going to be cast aside for AI tools. That's good to hear.
Definitely not.
Well, let's jump in then to, I mean, I can see the link, but let's make it clear for our listeners. Your interest in AI and your desire to lift the administrative burden, it seems like, had a strong influence on your founding of this company, which you've identified, which is ClearBrief. Can you tell us a little bit about the company and what it does?
Definitely. So one of the things that sort of the vision that I had was to create a tool that doesn't intimidate lawyers who don't like technology and who don't want to have to learn a whole new way of doing things. I want to build something that would fit into what we're already doing and that doesn't require expensive integration with anything, you know, any existing systems. It's just a tool that fits into your Microsoft Word process, because pretty much all, it's extremely high in the high 90s percentage wise of attorneys, judges, everyone working on legal briefs uses Microsoft Word. And the reason is because it's just the best tool out there for all the complex formatting that you need to have on legal documents. And we've built ClearBrief, it exists in two places. The first is that it's an add-in for Microsoft Word so that whatever it is you're writing or working on, you just click one button and ClearBrief pops up. And the workflow basically is that you can upload right in Microsoft Word, our happy place, right? You can upload any factual documents that you're talking about in your brief. So the record, basically in an appeal, the transcripts, any orders in the case or other things, just drag them in as PDFs. You don't have to drag in the law. And then you click a button, one button, and ClearBrief automatically hooks up all of your citations in your document. It can identify in your draft every place where you're talking about a citation and hook it up to the source document so that it's displaying it for you on the right-hand side of Word. So as you're writing, as you're editing, you can see the source. Then, because I wanted to create a place that was a real workspace that covers all of those tasks that we have to do, again, like the administrative burden piece, one thing that has always stressed me out is table of authorities. It's the worst piece of the the process for me because, you know, you're editing and you're writing and, you know, you have to sort of wait till the very end in order to finalize the table of authorities. And I talked with, you know, I've talked with over 200 attorneys and judges and paralegals across the country, all different practice areas. And nobody knows how to do a table of authorities with, you know, the tools in Microsoft Word. Attorneys definitely don't know. So most of them are relying on paralegals to do it. But then it creates this kind of traffic jam at the last minute where you want to be editing things, but you can't move things around because then it's going to take time. So ClearBrief is just a one-click table of authorities without you having to tag things as you're writing and say, this is a site, this is a site, this is the id. You don't have to do any of that, just one click. So that's a pretty magical moment when I show ClearBrief to folks. And then, so part two is that when you're done, you know, you would just download your brief as a PDF and file it in the normal way. But then you can also click a button that we call Judge View. And what Judge View is doing is taking all of that data from your brief and sending it to your secure account in the cloud so that you can view now the brief alongside the source doc. Your brief is completely interactive for the judge so that you could share the link with the judge, with opposing counsel as your kind of courtesy copy via email. And now they can access this really cool version of your brief that judges love. It's like you just made the judge's life 1,000 times easier and they don't have to have ClearBrief. They don't have to have, you know, anything special. They can just click and look at it in this fully interactive way so that they can see the record sources. They can see the legal sources. And the other thing I want to point out is that we're using publicly available legal data, including, you know, the opinions, the statutes, the regulations, everything, so that you don't have to have a subscription to any specific legal research tool. You can just, anyone who has the link can look at the source documents. I want to also come back and share more about how the AI piece fits in. I didn't cover that yet, but that's the workflow.
That sounds like our version of hyperlinking, but kind of on steroids. In Texas, Jackie, where our courts are pretty sophisticated when it comes to electronic documents. And so we're told to really do it right, we need to be hyperlinking our PDFs. Some people will go so far as to link outside documents like through a Westlaw or Lexis site, or they'll provide all the documents in one PDF, which is sounds like that's something like what ClearBrief does. And then they'll hyperlink within to get where we're going. But it sounds like ClearBrief is really a tool that kind of puts all that together. And as you say, just click it and forget it, more or less.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And that is similar to other states and other state appellate courts like New York that do require certain hyperlinks. And the processes that lawyers have gone through to achieve that is a very like expensive, time-consuming process. It's very manual, right? It's printing off a case and saving it as a PDF and then having to manually hyperlink each thing. This is totally simple and just instant. We're identifying everything, pulling in the source for you. But the other piece that I really wanted to highlight that I didn't cover yet, which is during that site checking process, right? When you have your draft in Word and you have the source documents, ClearBrief is actually scoring the writing for you. So every sentence, it's looking at the sentence that precedes the citation, and then it's looking at whatever source you cited. Or by the way, you can open your opponent's brief in right there in Word, and it's scoring it for you to see like, oh, actually the source document doesn't support what they're arguing here. And it flags it in red. And the other cool thing is that it can suggest other places in the factual record that seem relevant to what you're talking about. So that like, imagine this is like a different way to write your facts section. Like imagine you're writing your facts. You've already read the entire record because how else would you, as a human lawyer, how else would you know what to write about? But you know, you can go through that creative process of writing out the facts and telling that story. And after each sentence, you could just put ER excerpt of, you know, ER one, excerpt of record one, however you're referring to the record. And then ClearBrief knows, okay, let's find a record site to support every single thing in here. And so it can just link it up for you so that the time spent, you know, I don't know, many of us habit, I think, of saying to our, if we have associates, we're like, go find the site for this, you know? So this can really speed up that process.
You hit right on the question that I intended to ask you, because so many of us, you've got it in your head what you want to say and say your fact section. That's a great example. And you'll start writing and maybe you're not, you don't have that record right at your fingertips at that moment. And so, you know, I see it done all the time and I frequently do it this way where I'll put the word cite in a bracket and know that there shouldn't be any brackets in my brief when it's done, unless they're used for something else. But that really is amazing to think that, you know, a tool like that could help fill in that citation without me or a paralegal or associate or whoever having to go back and locate the specific page in the record. That's fantastic.
It's really quite magical. But again, you know, it's not doing it for you because you still have to go and look at it and compare and see like, yep, does this actually support? Because plenty of times I've written something in my free writing mode and from my memory, and then I actually go back to the record and I'm like, oh, wait, no, they never said that. That didn't happen. So ClearBrief can kind of tell what you're talking about and then suggest like, well, this seems like this would be the best match for what you're trying to say. And it just kind of gives you that feedback to say, oh, well, I better go back and double check that. So it really is coming back to your creative process, but it's just kind of taking that boring part of going and finding something and looking through that PDF and opening that PDF. And it's taking away that boring part.
You know, we see a lot of, I don't want to call them similar products in the market to what ClearBrief does, because I don't know that I've ever heard of something that does quite what you're describing. But you mentioned about scoring the writing. And is that score limited to the accuracy of the citations? Or do you go beyond that into like writing style or something? What comes to mind, for example, would be word rake or maybe brief catch in terms of actual writing style. Is there a feature like that?
Yeah, great question. So right now we are really focusing on the accuracy of the substance. That's where I really saw this opportunity to innovate, because there is no other legal tech product that's doing all of these things for you and applying, you know, AI in this way, confirmed by famed legal technologist Bob Ambrogi in his piece on ClearBrief. He said, you know, this does something that no other legal tech product does. As for that idea about highlighting writing style tips, I definitely, you know, see potential for that in the future. One of our investors actually is Professor Brian Garner, famed Texas lawyer, scholar, and his, you know, legal writing style tips have been so influential to me personally throughout my career. I was so excited actually when I didn't know him before reaching out to him and explaining the concept for ClearBrief pretty early on actually. And he immediately was excited about that because he understood, you know, the need for folks to be paying attention to the accuracy of their writing. So I definitely see the potential at some point to add in, you know, writing style tips, as well as, you know, writing organization tips. What I'm really excited about is how we're seeing our early users use ClearBrief, because you can not only use it for those finished or near finished drafts, but you can also use it early on in the outlining process as you're trying to, you know, you could just write out a sentence, an idea. John had the gun in the car or something, you know, and ClearBrief can find all those places in the record that mention John, whether it's, you know, having a pistol in the automobile, or, you know, it doesn't have to be the exact keywords that you're using. It can just kind of suggest the most relevant places in the record that relate to the concept. And that can really help you as you're outlining to see, okay, well, what is in the record? You know, how do I formulate my, how do I tell this story in a way that's going to support my legal theory? So that's something I'm really excited about as we see and we hear the feedback from our early users.
Providing surety bonds for court-related matters is a very niche industry, and there are very few appeal bond specialists who are as experienced as Court Surety Bond Agency. Whether the client is a sophisticated entity or an individual involved in litigation for the first time, CSBA uses its more than 110 years of combined surety experience handling appeal bonds to provide first-class service to its clients. For more information, visit courtsurety.com. But just to clarify, you upload the record. It'll test your writing against the record for accuracy, but I believe you mentioned access to publicly available versions of case law. It'll test your accuracy and representations of case law as well?
That's right. Right now, we are not offering the same kind of suggestions like we are for the factual documents and citations, but it will give you, yeah, feedback on, does it say what you're claiming it says on this page of the opinion? And that actually is also almost a writing style tip in a way, because what I've heard, I had the honor of talking to so many amazing litigators while I was doing my, what they call customer discovery as you're building the product. And the best, fanciest litigators in the country would tell me, what I consider good writing is writing that is, if you go to the source, it pretty much says 100% what the source says. You shouldn't be adding a lot of embellishment. There shouldn't be all sorts of fancy adjectives or your own wild take on it. Like, it should be a one-to-one, pretty much. That's good legal writing. And it's, you know, it's hard. As someone who is a former English major, I think that was one of the hardest things for me when I went to law school, to take away all my flowery adjectives. But that really is how, you know, you want it to be crisp, you want it to be clear. And you establish trust with the judge and with the reader when they see that, yep, that's exactly what the court held here.
You know, I see, just kind of as an offshoot listening to you talk, this has tremendous potential to allow access to justice in places where it didn't exist before, because you're really efficient. You know, you're adding so much efficiency to attorney time. And I guess you kind of talked about child welfare, and that seems like a great place where you have kind of underrepresented litigants on the civil side, that this kind of thing can shortcut the cost of representation in a way that really is meaningful.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to hear you say that. That's what I hope for, because exactly. I mean, it's very difficult. You're seeing a massive growth in the number of self-represented litigants because people can't afford an attorney for child custody cases, for family law cases. And there are, you know, massive consequences to generations of families because of that. And if we can make it, you know, a little bit easier on attorneys to get the, you know, the briefs in the right format so that it's crisp, it's clear, they've actually cited to the facts. By the way, that was kind of an interesting thing I learned too, is that in some practice areas, you know, especially in the trial court, attorneys are not kind of following the gold standard that we consider very important in appellate law, of having, you know, a citation after pretty much every fact that you're referring to. And that's really hurting the ultimate outcome of the case, because they just don't have the resources to go and find that information in the record and clarify it for the judge. So it really does bring kind of an interesting phenomenon that I realized in talking to so many judges specifically, because we don't all have the chance to talk to judges about things, mm-hmm. You know, except we go to these CLEs and we hear the very big picture. But I actually heard the same exact thing from all the judges I talked to, which is they get super frustrated when they go to look up your, whatever you're claiming the record says, if it doesn't say that, or if you took them to the wrong page, or if you're sloppy with your citations, they will put down your brief and they will go to your opponent's brief. And like they all said that. They're like, I'll just put down like that. It's not worth it. I don't trust that attorney anymore. They just lost credibility. And I don't think I ever realized that fully, honestly, as a practitioner, that how important it is. We don't really always think about what the judge is doing with our writing when they get it. So
I'm kind of thinking, and we've talked about the appellate side of things, but on the trial side in particular, where you don't necessarily have a record or a staff attorney, you know, something like a summary judgment where you can kind of link all your source documents together and provide that to the trial judge, who probably doesn't have the time and resources to delve through it quite like a court of appeals judge and staff attorneys might. It seems like there's a lot of potential impact there to really shortcut that side of the process for them.
Absolutely. That's why I wanted to build something that wasn't just a tool for the lawyers. It's a really with that judge view feature I was talking about, it's really a systems tool, because we are doing all this work on our side to find the right documents, to make sure they say what we're claiming they say. And then we're making the judge, we're making their clerk, we're making their paralegal, and we're making also opposing counsel. Their paralegal, maybe we don't care about opposing counsel, but still, it is frustrating. I mean, I feel like we should maybe care about opposing counsel, because if we wrote an awesome brief and our law is airtight, our facts are airtight, I want to show that off to them. So we shouldn't be making everybody replicate the same work. Let's make that easy so that we're all on the same page, and let's get to the heart of the dispute.
What I think this tool really does is just an efficiency tool that has the potential to remove a lot of friction from the process. And we've been mired in inefficiency and friction throughout the course of the development of our profession. But I'm thinking back to like my early days as an appellate lawyer and a very large firm. And we had a paralegal who was dedicated to site checking our briefs. And it, of course, this also takes me back to thinking about law school and law review kind of stuff. It seems like this tool has the ability, if you use it properly and do it in conjunction with a good draft to begin with, you apply the tool, it would eliminate some of the need to have other humans look at your work to verify its accuracy, because you have the ability to see what the software has flagged for you, go look at it yourself, and the software says or is hinting to you, well, this passage may not really support what you're saying in your brief, and you can judge for yourself whether that's accurate and not rely on another person to tell you. So have you seen a use case for that, or the law reviews contacting you and say, hey, what do we have to do to get licensed for this?
Oh, yes. We've had enormous interest, actually also from law professors to use ClearBrief as a teaching tool. But I want to mention one other feature I didn't talk about, which we are still finalizing and will be available very shortly, which is ClearBrief can automatically fix all of your formatting of your citations as well, so that you're not having to manually go through and review every little suggestion about the formatting. It will just fix it for you. And then if you want to dig in and see what was fixed, you can. But it's very efficiently, because we are using a natural language processing, an AI-driven approach. It's different than kind of the rule-based approaches that previously currently exist in terms of fixing formatting of citations. So that's a feature that, yes, law reviews are very excited about that. But to your point about, you know, does it replace humans? So I think it is going to allow for doing more with less. But one of the things that we've done, I think, differently maybe than other legal tech companies is that from the very beginning, I really focused on paralegal stakeholders. And I interviewed a lot of paralegals. And we actually partnered with the National Paralegal Association, NALA, because paralegals are really important to the entire process. And the other dynamic here is that in general, I found from talking with folks, they're not billing for the approximately like 8 hours per brief that they're spending on things like cleaning up the formatting of the sites and site checking. They're generally writing off about that much time because they're like, oh, I spent too much time in the brief, or I'll just write that off. Or they might just feel like, well, that's overhead and I'm going to write it off. So if firms can gain efficiency there, they can use that time for work that's actually billable, that they're in fact billing for. And so that's really valuable to the business. But from the paralegal perspective, the paralegal's time can be freed up to do more organization for the firm, to do more of the high value tasks that allow small firms to earn more money. Like there's, you know, data around the faster you respond to inquiries to new clients, the more likely you are to get more business and to become profitable. So it's really helping paralegals view themselves as almost like project managers. And they're not so bogged down in they have to manually build a table of authorities. And
well, and it seems like it kind of frees up some flexibility in attorney fee schedules and things as well. Because, you know, if you're working on a flat fee type of arrangement, it makes a lot more sense to have this kind of tool so that you don't have to spend 8 hours of time going back and doing that kind of thing when all that's going to do is cut into the amount of profit you're going to make off your flat fee at the end of the day.
Exactly. And I really think that lawyers, I haven't seen so much resistance, honestly, to people thinking, oh, well, then I'm just going to make less money if I use this tool. Because I think it is pretty apparent that this kind of efficiency will enable you to actually earn more money, to do the work that's more visible to your clients. And another thing, actually, I'm curious to get your thoughts on. I've been thinking around this judge view feature where you share the interactive version of the brief. It doesn't give any of that kind of semantic analysis or the scoring. It's the fully interactive version. I feel like sharing that with your clients would give them a better understanding of the value of the appellate work that you've done. I don't think they always realize, like, look, I just wove together a brilliant narrative.
Document's only 20 pages long. I mean, come on, how much time could you have spent?
I think there's something to that because, you know, depending on the type of client, you know, so many of our appellate clients really, like, we're really dealing with the trial lawyers, I think, more often than not than the actual clients. But I think you're right. When you get the bill and it's all this time for writing a brief and researching and checking citation, you know, all that kind of stuff, it is nice to kind of have a bundled up package of, no, this is why we have to do that. Here's what the record looks like. Here's kind of how it all fits together in the end. That kind of thing does make some sense.
I really think, you know, when it comes to alternate fee structures, let's think about flat fees as the example. That's how flat fee based lawyers become more profitable, is by becoming more efficient. And this is a ginormous efficiency tool, potentially. There's a lot of other technology tools that help make us more efficient, but it seems to me that if you can spend a little less time digging around in the record and a little less time poking holes in every little citation in your opponent's brief, because you've got a tool that's, you know, you're rounding, you're almost to second base as opposed to just taking off, you know, after hitting your base hit, that is really tremendous in terms of the efficiency that you can gain. And, you know, the more efficient you are, whether it's flat fee or hourly fee, the more profitable work you can do.
I'm not a sports expert here. I'm a musician, but I think I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, efficiency is, as I've said, and I beat this drum a lot, is efficiency really is the name of the game. I mean, clients expect it. We need to be removing the friction, as I said, and not do things that wind up being, you know, wasted time. We don't need to be running down. It sounds like to me that ClearBrief is a product that really, you know, helps advance the ball on that, to just kind of complete the sports analogy.
Another thing actually that I'm curious about is I think that this being able to share your published, you know, your filed briefs via the judge view feature, you know, on your website, and to kind of showcase some of your best briefs in a way that a client could actually understand it, would actually really help to explain why, you know, why me? Why are you hiring me instead of this other attorney down the block? Look at, you know, the craft of my writing. Look at this brilliant piece that I wrote. So that's another thing I'm interested in exploring.
I love that idea too, because, you know, one way that we used to do that in the old days was we had paper copies of our briefs and we would just send our client a duplicate of what the court got. And when you can hold it in your hand and turn the pages, you know, you can kind of sense there's some amount of craftsmanship that goes into this, right? But it's much less so in the case of electronic briefs. But what you're suggesting, Jackie, is you have the ability to show value in other ways it's not outward craftsmanship, you know, the quality of the paper or, you know, the quality of the cover of the brief, but you can see how we've had to link things up in certain ways that, you know, a layperson just isn't equipped to do. And so I think that's a great point.
Well, and looking at very few people outside of the party's attorneys and the court will ever look at the record. And so to kind of have that combined and public facing, I think makes a lot of sense, because you can read a brief, and unless you're going to go and really dig into what's available, you just kind of have to take the brief at face value. But if you're seeing it also paired with, here's some of the key documents, here's the record testimony, you know, that kind of stuff, it really does make a richer reading experience to kind of understand all that went into it. Okay, well, here's what we've taken from this cold record and turned it into something that is readable and understandable and persuasive.
Definitely. And I'm really interested in, as well as in talking with courts. We're currently talking with a number of state appellate courts about having them publish their opinions with clear brief so that the public can also understand that, because, you know, I don't know if you've had this experience, but as a trained lawyer, when I read appellate opinions, sometimes I'm just like, I cannot follow this. I'm having to go look up everything that they're saying to even follow what they're talking about. And, you know, it's one small step towards, I think, a more accessible justice system. If the public could read, okay, well, what case are they, why does this case stand for this idea that they're talking about here? And it's been very cool, actually, to run Clear Brief on Supreme Court briefs, U.S. Supreme Court briefs, because the judicial appendix is available. So I was just looking at a brief that was about a property dispute or environmental dispute. And when they're talking about the tracts of land, with Clear Brief, you can see, you know, the images while you're reading about it, and you can see what they're talking about. So that's also a really cool feature is, you know, Clear Brief is able to, you know, identify the images that are in the record as well. And so it's very powerful, as particularly when I've looked at, you know, criminal briefs and other things, to be able to see the pictures of the evidence, to see the scene of the crime, or it just makes it a much more rich interactive experience for the person who's trying to make the decision.
Yeah, we had a criminal judge on very recently, and he was talking about how they put a case, an opinion out recently that involved a video. And so they put screen caps of the video in the opinion and then put a hyperlink and hosted the video on the court's website so that people could go straight to it and see the video as they read the opinion, which, you know, this sounds like you're shortcutting a step there. You know, you don't have to have the court play host to all that.
I have to ask the question. How does an English-French major who educated herself on artificial intelligence turn this idea into reality? And you mentioned the team early on in the conversation. I assume you've got folks around who know how to code this stuff.
Yes, actually. And I'm happy to break that down. And it does have some Texas connections there by chance, actually. So when I was thinking about this idea, I mean, it was great being here in Seattle because everybody is a technologist, just like everyone. And so I started out by talking with a friend of a friend who was an AI, you know, engineer and developer. And I remember taking him, we went to the courthouse library and I showed him examples of opinions and case law. And I was like, could this work? Is this data structured enough that it would work? And that was kind of my very first inspiration of, you know, when he said, yeah, I think this absolutely worked. I think your idea makes sense. And to hear that from an engineer was, it gave me the, you know, the boost I needed to kind of keep going. And then I connected with via LinkedIn. I was looking for other women who had experience in building AI products. And I connected with Ann Jude Hunt, who's one of my advisors. She's VP of product at realtor.com. And she's, you know, she has a technical background and has built a number of AI products. And so, and she's, you know, based in Austin, Texas. So that's the Texas connection there. And, but, Ann was so, excited about, you know, and coming from someone who had done that hard work of taking an idea and turning it into a real product that works, to talk with her and to strategize with her was invaluable. And she ended up connecting me with a developer who helped me build the early prototype of the algorithm. And once, you know, and then I was, you know, I was doing my customer discovery and just talking with so many lawyers, and the idea kind of shifted and changed as I talked to so many people and really heard patterns about what their biggest pain points were and it resonated with my own experience. So once we kind of had this prototype of the algorithm, we were able to get from, because of, you know, kind of all those folks I'd interviewed, I got briefs and records and just, we started testing it. And it was a very manual process at first in testing the algorithm, but that helped me gain enough traction so that I could go out and, you know, build the company. So some of the other, you know, big breaks that happened were, again, just kind of through LinkedIn networking. I connected with Mark Britton, who, he was the founder of Avvo. He's since exited and is a very famous investor, you know, here in Seattle. And he also, you know, was an early believer in ClearBrief and really understood how this was novel and how what we're doing could really change, you know, the entire system. And so he was, yeah, one of my earliest advisors, and Brian Garner, and kind of, I started to get critical mass there, and which helped me, you know, with fundraising. So then I was able to hire my full-time technical team, which includes my fabulous CTO, Jose Sada, who after 20 years at Microsoft building AI products and leading, you know, leading teams of engineers, he left Microsoft and joined ClearBrief. And he's just been absolutely essential in taking the algorithm and this idea and productizing it and turning it into a real working, awesome product. And I also have to give a shout out to my husband, who is our lead front-end engineer. And so he's works, you know, harder than anyone because he has to listen to me, you know, complain and stress out about everything. Sure. and, you know, and then Christy, who I mentioned, Christy Hollingshead, and we have just a number of other fantastic NLP engineers and contractors and full-time employees who have, you know, gotten ClearBrief to the product that it is today.
Did this mean, Jackie, that you're no longer actively practicing law? You know, it sounds like this is not a garage-based business, if it ever was, anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting because I am still kind of keeping my head in the game by I do pro bono work, continue to do pro bono work for some Seattle nonprofits, and you know, just that's how I sort of keep up my my knowledge of especially appellate practice. My main pro bono work for the last several years has been working on, you know, appellate briefs with Legal Voice, which is a Northwest women's rights and LGBTQ rights organization. And so I've done a number of, you know, appellate briefs with them and just continue to consult on different litigation matters.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot of insight and good information, and we really appreciate you being here. I wanted to ask you sort of a broad question based on your work and having been a practicing lawyer and digging into AI. You know, what is your vision of how AI can fit together with the broader legal system?
My vision is that not only will we use AI for the things that it's good for, which are primarily the administrative, stressful tasks that take away from our satisfaction as lawyers, but this will lead to much greater efficiency within the system, so that courts are moving faster and their decisions are more fair, and that ultimately we all have more satisfaction in our work as attorneys, and the justice system can serve the public in a better way.
Sounds like a mission statement.
It does.
I've thought about this a lot.
I think you're hitting on something that is really important, because every little step that we take, you know, in Texas and a lot of places in the US, we really have completely transformed the practice of law in the last year, perhaps not willingly, but we're seeing the effects of that. And it's been pretty tremendous. We were talking to a judge last night who's a family court judge. And she said, you know, in the last year, I have started to see people in my court that I never saw before. And so by doing Zoom, I'm able to serve a whole group of people that were never here before. And so, you know, in these types of solutions, you really do start to see what we weren't doing correctly the last time around. And so it's great that these solutions are out there continuing to pick up those holes and cracks and fill those in and find new ways to make sure that the system works for everybody.
You're exactly right. I mean, this is a moment in time that's so unique where the legal profession is actually embracing change. And so I'm ready to seize that moment. And I hope everyone is too. I mean, after this year, we're all thinking about, you know, what's important in our lives, and we should be using our, you know, our work hours for the work that's most rewarding and that benefits our clients the most, and that benefits the justice system the most. So I think tech is a big piece of that. It's not the only piece, but it's really exciting to see that transformation happen.
As we end, we always like to ask our guests if they have a tip or a war story that they'd like to offer our listeners. So do you have anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, you know, I think, so my war story, I guess, and it's a war story and a tip, super exciting. But what I really learned from watching the video was that, you know, so often you don't realize what your superpowers are as an appellate attorney. And I think it really helped me realize that it's being able to find that specific fact in that moment of pressure so that we can get in the details. We know the details and we care about the boring things that actually can end up unlocking the whole case. And I sort of saw that play out when I watched the video where a justice would be asking me a question and I could, because I'd pored over that record and I'd pored over the details of the cases, I really had a thoughtful answer about how this one detail should change the outcome of the case. And so I think it's possible to get a recording of yourself doing your, you know, your oral arguments that can really, you know, just help you appreciate what's strongest and what's weakest, you know, too, about your appellate practice, but also to remember that our ability to focus on those boring, mundane details is actually a superpower. And we should be proud of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a great reminder.
I love that. That's tremendous.
Thank you so much for having me today. This was really fun. And it's wonderful to just talk with other people who think about these things.
Well, we appreciate it. This has been so interesting. And it's great to hear that people like you are out there thinking about this in the legal space and finding ways to, I mean, frankly, improve both the process and the results.
And the legal technology nerd in me is really grateful because I enjoy hearing about this stuff and getting a vision of where things might be headed in the future. So thank you, Jackie, for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, presented by Butler Snow. If you're enjoying the show, please recommend it to your colleagues or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate everyone who has rated the show and otherwise supported us so far. To stay in touch, suggest topics, ask questions, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or tweet us at texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.